This is Mandy Morton
on Cambridge 105 Radio.
Well, it's time to introduce our Cambridge 105 radio vet once again. She drops in once a month to absolutely amaze us with her technical bravado, I think. Yeah, that's a good word for it. Hayley Baker. Hayley, welcome.
Morning.
The first thing we ought to talk about, we're going to talk about sort of weight problems. And in fact, there are so many in different sort of areas. We're going to talk about them over the next couple of months.
Yeah.
But the first thing we need to do is talk about this extreme cold weather. I mean, with what is it called, the beast from the east, which sounds a bit bizarre really, doesn't it? But essentially over the next few days, those night temperatures in particular are going to drop so low that we're just simply not used to them. I mean, I'm a gardener and worrying myself sick about all the pots and all the stuff that's out there at the moment, but at this time of year there's nowhere to put them, so that's that. So they have to sort of leave them to their own fortune. But animals, we've got to think about, even if they're indoors.
Yeah, absolutely. In particular, I know my little guinea pig Pedro has migrated into one of the bedrooms for the moment because it's just simply too cold for them outside. Even if Pedro, for example, has been used to being outside since he was born, but even so, this weather is too cold for them. There's a risk of water freezing, so you need to make sure that you know their bottles aren't freezing up. And it's purely too cold for them to be outside, even if they're in a kind of straw-filled bedding. So my advice would be the next few nights that if you've got small furries outside, so your rabbits and your guinea pigs, you really should be considering bringing them in. Absolutely. Yeah. Even if it's just to put them into your carry cage or something like that, it doesn't have to be big. Just so that they can snuggle down overnight, stay warm, and then you can put them out again during the day. Just keep a close eye, as I said, make sure that water isn't freezing up, and just keep an eye on the temperature that it isn't dropping. But I think a lot of the colder temperature is coming from the wind chill as well, which is good. So actually, if you've got them in a sheltered area and then they're in a cage with lots of straw during the day, they should be fine. But definitely overnight, I'd be bringing the little guys in.
Marvellous stuff. And the thing is, I suppose, about all these animals is that, I mean, they actually originate from hot countries initially. So, I mean, these sort of temperatures that we're about to go into are just completely off the scale.
Yeah, guinea pigs do come from mountains, so they're used to being out and kind of in the cold, but I think they get adapted to the temperatures that they're used to, and so when it's suddenly such a shock and a change.
And that'd be the same with rabbits, I
absolutely,
assume.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's this sudden change that it's got very, very cold again, their body's just not going to cope with. And to be honest, a lot of rabbits and guinea pigs don't carry a huge amount of fat, or shouldn't carry a huge amount of fat, and so they just don't have this kind of insulating ability. They rely on their fur to keep them warm, and it's just not going to be quite enough in these temperatures.
Something sort of horrific struck me yesterday while I was sort of walking through the frost last night, is the fact that hedgehogs, we're getting all this sunshine during the day, and actually if you do find a sunny spot, in spite of it being, you know, the temperatures being very, very low, it begins to feel very much like spring. And I mean, the blackbirds are going berserk in hedges at the moment as well, and you know, sort of chasing each other. So, nature is bowling on and almost ignoring these temperatures. And the worry is that, of course, a lot of things will be coming out of hibernation thinking, I'm hungry, it's time for me to sort of stock up. And hitting this sort of stuff is going to be really a problem.
It's very confusing for the animals at the moment because they don't know whether they're coming or going, because it starts getting warmer, it starts getting sunny, and then we get hit with this sort of thing. And the difficulty is that the ground freezes. So particularly for the hedgehogs and moles and things like that, they just can't dig through the ground. So they can't find their earthworms and the food that they should be eating as easily. So if you do see, particularly hedgehogs, if you see them out during the day, if you see one in your garden, that's not right. They shouldn't be there. So if you do, it is worth, you know, catching them and bringing them to either a rescue shelter or to a vet to just get them checked, because they shouldn't be out during the day.
They need to be fattened up, don't they?
Yeah, absolutely.
Good stuff. So people keep an eye on that. And speaking of fat, we have chosen the subject of fat over your next two visits here because such is the sort of the extreme things that an animal overweight can actually suffer from. I mean, people, we're told on a daily basis with people that being overweight, being obese causes diabetes, it causes cancer, it causes so many things. Is that the same in animals?
Absolutely the same. So you've hit the nail on the head there. Exactly the same problems that it causes in humans. So heart disease, tumour growth, you know, issues with joints, diabetes, all those sort of things happen in animals as well. And it's definitely becoming a major problem for us. There was a study done recently and it says that up to 60% of dogs in the UK are overweight, which means that there are more dogs overweight than there are normal weight.
My goodness.
Which is
same as people then.
It's true. It's going in the same sort of direction and it is quite a scary statistic. And it's definitely changed the way that we as vets often have to manage our animals. And it's now becoming an issue that this weight gain is causing problems in dogs and cats. And that's what's causing issues later on in life rather than old age changes.
In exactly the same as people then, really.
Exactly.
Because if you're hauling a lot of weight around, then your joints aren't going to last as long as if you're sort of keeping your eye on your diet.
Yep.
Let's take dogs to start with, because dogs will, I mean, my experience of having dogs is that they will eat anything, but we as humans like to treat our animals, yep. And I don't know if that is the problem, basically, or whether it's the new improved dog foods that you can actually get that are out there on the market, or the biscuits, or whatever it is, the general diet stuff. But who is essentially to blame?
I think it's very difficult to pinpoint one particular area, but I think a lot of the issues come down to the fact that we like to treat our pets because we love them and they're part of our family. And I think that slipping them a crisp here and there and a little bit off the table, scraps off the table, finishing, you know, what's left over from our meals, we do that out of the best intent possible because we want our dogs to be happy and get these things, and they give you those big puppy dog eyes where they're going, I've been starved all day and I'd love some of your food. The difficulty is that what we eat, if you imagine that's then magnified in them, so if you're giving them a sausage, it's so much more calories than if we were to eat a sausage.
Because of their body mass.
Exactly. Mm. And so there is definitely that problem that I think people just overfeed human food. It's not a bad thing. There were some studies that said actually the risk of getting a twisted stomach, for example, decreases significantly if a dog gets some table scraps. So it's not a bad thing to get some. It's just about making sure that if you do give them scraps on the table, well, make sure then that the amount of food you give them that evening is decreased to take that in, for example. Now, one of my nurses has very kindly done me a handy cheat sheet.
I'll give her a name check.
Jenny, thank you.
Good morning, Jenny.
She has written down, they've got, the nurses do all of our weight checks and management at the practice, and they've got this wonderful chart where it shows you the equivalent of what human food is for a dog. So, for example, an ounce of cheddar cheese is equivalent to a human eating 1.5 beef burgers. So in a bun with your cheese and your mayonnaise
all
and whatever.
Of that.
So it's huge. And one sausage is equivalent to us eating 2.5 hamburgers. So it is, you know, a huge amount more, what we consider a little bit. Actually, to the dog, is more than a meal. It's a massive amount. Now, obviously, it depends on the size of the dog. This is an average kind of 15-kilogram dog that we're talking about here. But you really need to have a think about if you're feeding, for example, a digestive biscuit, that's equivalent to a whole hamburger. So it's just making sure that if you do give your dog treats, there's no problem with doing so, but then their evening meal needs to be adjusted accordingly.
To do that. And what about the sort of the dog food that's out there at the moment? Because, I mean, you know, I know from a cat's point of view, there are so much stuff out there, and it you know, you always see in the supermarkets us cat owners are always gathered around the cat food areas all shaking our heads going, well, she liked it last week, but of course we're not talking about cats just yet, we're talking about dogs. They really will consume mostly anything,
yep.
Certainly in my experience. So what about the sort of proprietary brands that are out there?
So the difficult thing with dog food is that it's not necessarily based on the quality that will make your dog overweight or not. It's how much you're feeding it. So even if you give your dog the best quality food that's available on the market, if you overfeed them, they're still going to put on weight and get fat. So it's just about making sure that every food that you're giving, you try and buy the best that you can afford, but I completely understand that not everyone can afford to spend £70 on a bag of food. So it's making sure that you just don't overfeed what you're giving. And each manufacturer will have a recommended amount on the bag.
Do we take any notice of that?
That is a guide. So it's a starting point. And what I generally say to people is when you start on a food, feed that amount for a couple of weeks and then reweigh your dog. If they're putting on weight, then cut it back.
I always look on the dark side, obviously, because that's what I spend my time writing on that. But I always look on the devious side of the thing. this about when they say, you know, that your dog needs two cans of this a day, and you look at the volume of that, it's just sort of like saying, well, actually, we want you to buy more food. So if we tell you to feed two cans a day, when actually the dog is perfectly happy on one, you've got a bit of a conflict there.
Yeah, and I like to be an optimist and hope that that's not what the food companies are doing, but you have to just keep an eye on what your individual dog is doing. So I know, for example, one of my dogs, my older dog Humphrey, he gets about half of what is required on the back of his food, whereas Cass, my younger dog, she gets the full amount of what is required.
And I suppose that's metabolisms, how much they burn off,
how much energy, how much they're exercising. So these, the back of the packet is a guide and it's a good starting point, but it certainly doesn't mean that that's the law. And I have people coming in who get quite upset because they're feeding what's recommended and their dog's getting fat. And it's like with humans, everyone's metabolism is different. Mm. Every dog's metabolism is different. So if you're finding that your dog is putting on food from the amount that it's getting, either you need to increase his exercise so he's burning off more of those calories, or you need to cut back the food a little bit. And then generally any food can be fed to make sure that your animal doesn't put on weight, regardless of the quality.
It's a good point that you make there, because of course age has a great deal of difference, I guess, to it. Because yeah, if we're talking about a sort of a 2 or 3 year old dog that's still bouncing around on the park and you know, doing all the things that a dog of that age does, that's great. But you do regularly see dear old elderly dogs really having difficulty walking, looking very much overweight, and just sort of trying to get from A to B. You can see that they're completely focused on, I might get to the next lamppost. That always makes me feel so very sad.
Yeah.
Because they're huge.
Yeah, and I think that that's one of the biggest things for me that I see in practice, is that as the dog gets older, the weight gain often gets worse and worse, because the problem is that they might be slightly overweight, put a slight bit of strain on those joints, which means that they don't want to exercise as much because it's a bit uncomfortable. So they're not exercising as much, they're not burning off the calories, they put on more weight, and it becomes this vicious cycle. And it's really important as your dog gets a bit older to switch it to a senior food, because it's slightly restricted in calories, so it's going to help try and break this cycle of putting weight on and becoming more sedentary. So that's really important. But the other thing is just making sure that you're aware of your dog's weight and keeping an eye on it, and making sure that it's not creeping up as they get older. Just because the less weight those joints are carrying, the better in the long run.
Of course, little dogs do tend to be a little bit more finicky over their food. So like cats, they you know, oh, I don't like that, I'm not eating that.
Yeah.
But do little dogs tend to have as many problems as the lovely big Labradors and things?
We do absolutely see it. And the issues that we have with overweight smaller dogs is that it tends to put more of a stress on their airways or on their heart. So it's not so much of an impact on their joints. It does still affect their joints, but it tends to affect the rest of their system more. And particularly with small breed dogs, for example, Yorkies, they have a real issue with their windpipe anyway, that it tends to be a little bit weakened. And then you put this big fat layer around their neck and they go to sleep and it compresses their windpipe. It can cause a real problem. So it's just as bigger an issue in the small dogs as it is in large dogs, just potentially coming out in different ways.
And I know, of course, I mean, when we visit you, the first thing that you do with our pussycat is to put her on the scales.
Yep.
And I imagine that from a veterinary point of view, that speaks volumes.
And we do that with every time we're doing a routine check, or if an animal's getting medication, we check its weight. This is why it's important to have these annual checkups every year as well. Even if you have decided against vaccinating your animal, it's still important to have them checked up once a year, because we can keep an eye on this weight. And what will come into next month is the weight loss as well, because we can then keep an eye to see if they're putting on or if they're losing weight abnormally, and we can monitor things from there. And, you know, so certainly, it's quite telling as well when you've got a very large dog that suddenly starts losing a lot of weight very quickly when the owner hasn't really changed anything. And that also sets alarm bells off to us that maybe diabetes has developed or something like that. So keeping a regular check of your dog's weight is important. And you can, you know, all vets will be more than happy for you to run your dog in and just put them on the scales in the waiting area and record it on your card. Or if you've got a smaller dog, it doesn't matter if it's not 100% accurate, but if you can stand on the scales with your dog and work out a weight from there, it's more the trend that you're following. So it doesn't matter what the absolute weight is, you just want to see whether this dog is continuing to gain or continuing to lose, and if so, then it might be worth getting them accurately weighed.
Let's look at the causes of some of these diseases from animals being overweight. So let's stick with the dogs and talk about diabetes. What can you do as a vet?
So with diabetes, it is a very treatable condition, as long as you pick it up in time. They can be quite sick when they first present, because they can get quite a lot of acid building up in their blood because they're not able to metabolise glucose properly. It's caused from a lack of insulin, and it is significantly correlated to be associated with obese animals. So it tends to be those dogs that have had a slightly heavier build for a prolonged period of time. And it is something that we can treat. The owners often have to give injections twice a day for the rest of the animal's life, so it's quite a heavy burden to be taking on. But certainly, if you are overweight, your risk significantly increases of developing diabetes.
And what about heart conditions?
So again, the more weight that the animal carries, the more the heart has to pump and the harder it has to work. So it can then cause thickenings in the heart, it can cause valve issues, or if there happens to be a pre-existing heart problem, it can make it come out earlier because of the stress, causes high blood pressure and problems along those lines.
When you're running your hands down a dog, what is the perfect weight for a dog? The point is that we all groom our dogs, we all sort of cuddle them and things, and that's a good moment to just sort of have a feel down to see what you can feel and what you can't.
Yeah.
What would satisfy you?
So what I like to be able to do is look down from the top of the dog, providing there's not too much fluff, otherwise it's difficult to see. But you want to see a waist, you want to see a little bit of a tuck there. And then to feel it, you want to be able to run your hands down the side of the animal and feel the ribs nice and easily without having to apply too much pressure. And the same along the top of the spine. You should be able to feel those spinous processes, the little lumpy bits. And if you can feel those nice and easily without putting any pressure, then you know that your dog is a nice weight. If you're having to push to be able to feel the ribs or to feel the top of the spine, there's too much fat there and you need to be considering cutting it down.
So it's like people in the tire around the waist, isn't it? Really?
Exactly.
It's that sort of thing. How do your clients take to the fact, I'm just interested in this, take to the fact that you know, they bring in this puddingy dog, whoa, huge big dog, and you take one knock and think, oh my goodness me. I mean, do we as owners can we cope with being told, actually, you are overfeeding this dog beyond all measure?
I think most people are primarily concerned with their animal's well-being, and I think most people often don't realise that their dogs are overweight, particularly Labradors, for example. The view of what a normal Labrador is to the public and the view of what a normal Labrador is to a vet are two very, very different
animals.
This
is why I asked the other question.
Yeah. Mm. It is very difficult sometimes to explain to people that their animal is overweight because they've seen these other dogs that look very similar to them. They look very, very healthy and happy, but we consider them overweight. There was a study done, it was probably 10 or 15 years ago now, where they actually fed Labradors 75% of what was recommended and fed another group what was recommended. And the ones that were fed 75% of their food lived 2 years longer than the ones that were fed what was recommended. And
that's quite because, something in dog years,
yeah,
isn't it?
Absolutely. And it's just, I think, to show us that maybe our view of what a normal dog is now has got a bit on the large side. And I think as soon as you explain to most people what a Labrador should look like, they then understand, and everyone takes it incredibly well, actually, because I think everyone has their pet's best interest in heart. And if you're saying to them you're shortening your dog's life expectancy by continuing to feed this amount, then there are very few people that take offence from that because they just want to have their pet in the best condition possible.
We're going to move on to pussycats in a minute or two. We've got some good advice as far as keeping our dogs nice and trim. Hayley Baker is with us, our Cambridge 105 radio vet. We've chosen the subject of weight, certainly for this week and when Hayley visits us next month as well. And we've been talking, Hayley, about dogs being overweight and the things to watch for, essentially. But cats are almost in the other direction. My experience, certainly, of cats are that half the time you're spending your time trying to get them to eat their dinners, let alone not eat them. Cats are very fond of biscuits. And I think that certainly with all my lovely cats that I've had, biscuits could have proved to be their ruin one way or another. And I've got a new one now, Betsy Trotwood, who absolutely adores her biscuits. And I think she'd probably eat them all day long if we gave them to her. And she is listening this morning. Sorry about that, Betsy, but the secret is out. So a balanced diet for a pussycat.
Yep, absolutely. We do recommend generally with cats that they should get a bit of wet and a bit of dry food every day, because it's good for their teeth to get the dry food, but it's good for their bladder and kidney health to get a bit of wet food to get the water intake, because cats are notoriously difficult at making them drink.
Mm. Unless they've got a problem, of course.
Yes, and yes. Then they don't stop, bless them. So, that is what we generally recommend. Some people feed ad lib dry food throughout the day, and some cats are very good at just eating what they want, and when they're full, they'll stop eating. A large proportion of cats, though, we tend to find will either continue to eat to the point where they start getting quite fat, or the big issue that we actually find with cats, and why I think a lot of owners struggle to get weight off cats, is that cats wander and they'll disappear off to their little friend down the road and give that face of I'm starving again. Same with the dogs, and then they get more food. And so sometimes, even if you're restricting their calorie intake at home, the woman down the road is feeding them. Mm. And so you can't control what they're getting. Hunting is the other problem as well. That a lot of cats will hunt and will catch birds and mice and will eat
them. Do they actually eat them then?
Some will do, absolutely. And actually, it's very good nutrition for them if they're eating it. They're getting really good nutrients from their insides. But they do carry a lot of calories. So if your cat does catch and eat a bird or a mice, again, their daily calories have to be adjusted based on what else they've eaten. But cats can be really fussy. They can decide that they just don't want to eat, or they'll eat here and there. But there are very, very few cats that come into my practice that are underweight without a medical condition causing it. Yeah. I would say I have less than the number I can count on a hand that actually is purely because they just won't eat enough. So I think cats generally are quite good at self-limiting, but there are quite a few that will choose to overeat as well. And it's those ones that we need to keep an eye on.
And then there's the greedy ones that are constantly sick.
Yes.
They gobble. You know, absolutely gobble up their foods, and then, you know, you find it on the carpet sort of 10 minutes later, and you're thinking, well, that means that she hasn't had any food all day. So then you just put some more in the dish, and this continues, and then bit by bit and little by little, you find that, you know, you've got through 4 or 5 packets of food, and the cat's sitting at you smiling.
Yeah, absolutely. No, they're quite cunning in the way that they will manipulate things, because even if they do vomit, they will actually still be getting quite a lot of their calories. We do generally recommend that if you're finding that they're vomiting, then give them a little bit more, but then stop it and leave it, because it's just they're bolting back their food often, and then it just all comes back up too quickly.
Why do cats eat grass all the time? I mean, what's that to do with nutrition?
So it's actually used to kind of cleanse their stomachs, so it can induce vomiting. So cats will often do it if they're feeling a bit nauseous, if they've got a hairball.
It's self-medicating.
Exactly. It's just a natural thing that cats do when they feel like they need to vomit because they need to bring something up, or they're feeling a bit sick, and that's how they go about
doing it. And fur balls, of course, I suppose, is another issue as far as that's concerned.
Yeah, absolutely.
Fur balls can be a real problem when I mean, certainly in my experience, and you know, it's fairly limited to older cats, except for what we have at the moment. But it's true to say that when they are sort of grazing and eating their foods and things like that, you do get the feeling that they go off things very, very quickly. So a real sort of diet of everything being different for a cat works so much better than saying, right, that's what they're having and that's what I'm going to give them. It does encourage them to sort of gorge themselves occasionally.
Mm. And it varies from cat to cat. It really does, as to whether you have a cat that finds one type of food that it likes and it stays on it and that's it, or whether you've got one that every week it changes its mind on what flavour it likes or that sort of thing.
What about proper food for cats? I mean, like boiling up chicken and sort of giving them a little piece of beef and stuff like that. I mean, is that good?
Yeah, I mean, it's absolutely fine. I certainly kind of advise against it once they get past the age of 8 or 9, because one of the things that we do when they get a bit older is we restrict their phosphorus and their protein intake. And if we're giving them bits of meat, they're very, very high in protein. And the reason we do that is to try and protect their kidneys. So that's one of the reasons that we kind of say, okay, avoid that as they get a bit older, put them on a senior diet so that they're getting the right sort of nutrition, and that then helps protect those kidneys.
You can take your dog out for a walk. You can sort of impose an extra exercise system. What can you do for a cat that's overweight?
So what you can do is you can actually force them to work for their food. So you can...
I'm laughing here.
You can do things like scatter feeding in the garden. So if you've got a cat that is very food driven, you can throw the food into your garden and then they have to go and hunt around in the grass to try and find
it. Which is quite natural for them, really.
Absolutely. You can get little feeders that you put the food into and then they have to bat it about. out to get the food out. And you can hide it all over your house in packages and things like that to try and just force them to exercise to have to get this food rather than just putting it in a bowl. They know where it is. They walk up to it. They eat however much they want and go back to sleep.
Making life so easy.
Absolutely.
Yeah, because, I mean, a cat does spend most of its day asleep.
Yep.
Which is a thing. So playtime, important.
Very important. And if your cat likes string, as you were telling me about,
she's cheap to run.
Absolutely.
An ordinary ball of string, lovely.
Yeah. You can make them chase that around, and that's really good exercise for them as well.
So what sort of issues do you look at in cats that do come in to you? I mean, we've all seen the comedy cats with the great big tummy and the small head.
Yep.
And in reality, there are a few cats around like that.
Yep.
What can you do?
So we do worry with the overweight cats, same sort of things as with dogs, joint problems, heart problems, diabetes is a big one as well. And so there are several things that you can do. I've had some owners that have ended up actually shutting their cat in for a period of time so that they can specifically monitor the amount of food they're getting.
So nobody's feeding them.
Exactly. Mm. And it seems to work miraculously well. So I think a lot of the problem is other people feeding your cat. And at least if you can weigh out what's going into your cat, you can then see if it's too much or not. Whereas if you don't know whether they're going out elsewhere and getting a whole bowl of Whiskers or Felix or something like that, it is difficult to monitor that. There are foods that you can buy that are designed to make them feel full and to help burn fat, and they work fantastically. But again, that relies on your cat eating that and nothing else. Mm. So it can be very tricky.
And I imagine measuring out food, because, I mean, you know, in the morning when Betsy wants her biscuits, I just put my hand in her jar.
Yep.
And put those in. So she has a handful of my size hand. But you can get little measuring jugs, can't you?
Yeah.
Where you can actually work out exactly what they should be having.
Yeah, the kind of top quality foods have the cups with the amount on the side of it, so that you know how much you should be feeding every day. And I think a lot of people get quite a shock when you actually measure out how much it is you should be feeding, how little it is, particularly for the cats. It is a very, very small amount. And I know certainly when I had cats growing up, you just used to pour it in the bowl and wander off. And now looking back, I dread to think how much I was giving.
How much they get.
Yeah, poor Penguin, which was probably an apt name from her size.
So she waddled.
She waddled. She
I'm pleased you faced up to that. I'm pleased you've said that so that we don't all feel intimidated.
No, absolutely. My cat's growing up, and I'm going to blame my mother for this one completely, but they were definitely slightly on the cuddlier side, shall we say. And I think that's often the problem, is that a large cat is a cuddly cat. So I think people don't necessarily view it as a negative thing because it's cuddly. And I think it's very much the same as with the Labradors. Our view of what a normal cat is now actually is not a normal cat and is an overweight cat. And it's trying to persuade people that actually, yes, I know your cat may only be 4 kilograms, but from the body size, maybe should be more around the 3 kilogram mark.
I mean, what is a good weight for a pussycat?
It varies so much because of all the sizes, but and you're bulk standard Moggy really should be 3.5-4 kilograms.
Okay.
Obviously, there are going to be bigger Toms that it will be significantly more, 5 kilograms or so. And
we've got one.
Yeah, yes, absolutely.
And Stanley.
And he's a lovely size and weight and nice and kind of sleek. And that's exactly how they should be. But a lot of people, I think, feel nowadays that if you can feel a cat's ribs and if you can see a bit of a waist, then actually they're a bit underweight. But it's still the same as with dogs. You want to be able to feel those ribs and the top of the spine quite easily. They do carry a little bit more fat around their midsection, and that's kind of normal.
What, we're on a pussycat, what are those fat pads that hang down?
So that is,
does that mean they've had babies or what?
No, they are worse after they've had babies, definitely, but they are just fat pads. So they're the love handles for cats. So if they've got those, they are abnormal. They should not be there. So if you've got that little fat belly, that's because that's where they store their excess fat, and it shouldn't be there.
So you need to do something about it.
Absolutely.
And you've got to do it slowly, haven't you? Because, I mean, it's just like people, you can't just cut off a food source and suddenly decide that you're putting your animal on a diet.
Dogs you can cut down relatively quickly, and they can lose weight quite fast, and it doesn't have any impact on their body. It's better to do it slower, as with humans, just because then it's more likely to stay off. But with cats, you do have to do it very carefully. If they lose too much weight too quickly, you're actually going to damage their liver. So it is important to just wean it down nice and slowly. Over a 3 to 6 month period, you're looking at losing a few hundred grams. You want to do it very, very slowly. And again, you're talking about a few hundred grams, not 5 kilograms, like with the Labradors. So it is just little changes. And I think that can be quite frustrating for owners as well, because you're not seeing these big number changes. You're not necessarily seeing a dramatic change in your cat in a month's time. It can take this 6 months to a year even. And I often set people targets at their vaccinations that when I see them next year, I want them to be down a bit. And I say, you know, pop back in 6 months, pop your cat on the scale.
And that's doable, isn't it, in that time, without turning round to the cat and saying, no, you can't.
Exactly.
Just a few biscuits less each day.
Yep, and that's exactly it. It's just tiny little changes sometimes can make a really big difference for a cat. So, yeah, it is, if you put the effort in, just cutting back that little bit and just decreasing the amount every month, bit by bit, you will notice a significant difference over the year without have upsetting your cat too much.
Cold weather. We started with cold weather. Let's finish with cold weather. We tend to eat more in the cold weather because, you know, we want to keep ourselves lovely and warm inside. There tends to be more stews and mashed potatoes going on and all that sort of lovely stuff. Same with animals?
They don't need more food and it doesn't really have a significant impact on them. So, no, I'd be feeding them exactly the same. Unless they're a working dog and they're going outside, that's a different story. But, for your dogs and your cats, for this sort of short period, it's comfort eating is why we do it. And, they don't need anything specifically different.
Fantastic. Sorry about that, Betsy, but that's that.
Sorry, Betsy.
Yes, sorry, but Stanley's happy, though. He's been told that he's a good weight. next month, we're going to be talking about completely the reversal of the coin, something equally I know a little bit about, having elderly pussycats. But we'll be talking about that on the show next month. What you do need to do is tell everybody where they can find you. Yes. It's Vets for Pets.
Vets for Pets, and we're on Balmore Road and in the Beehive Centre. We're there 7 days a week, so please just pop by and come and see us.
I'm imagining this cartoon of all these very large, overweight dogs and all these huge, overweight pussycats all sort of queuing to get in to see you.
Please
fantastic.
Do.
Our Cambridge 105 radio vet, Hayley Baker, and she will be with us again next month.